in unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of that Tathagata's words.
Been thinking about what Katagiri refers to as the pivot of nothingness, the great round mirror. That the great round mirror of wisdom. Buddha's luminous wisdom mirror. Mel talks about it a lot, that there's some kind of pivot that happens, some turn that happens, so that what we see is wisdom. An expression of wisdom. And it's not book learning kind of wisdom. It's the wisdom that sees through all things to see what's really there. In Uji being time, what Dogen is talking about in one sense is being that wisdom. There is that pivot. He calls it, Katagiri calls it a pivot of nothingness, and I've said it's a pivot of no thingness. And it is referred to a lot. And there's no point in trying to get it. I'll come back to this, but we can only get it through using our plain old wisdom, our plain old discriminating thinking mind. What is that? What is that pivot? There's a famous, very famous story in the Platform Sutra about the sixth ancestor, Hoi Nung, or Daikon Eno in the ancestors that we recite. Hoi Nung was awakened and went to practice with the, he was thought of as a barbarian from the south, because his father had been disgraced. His father had been an intellectual civil servant in China in the, whatever it was, 300s or something, maybe 600 max. And so Huinong himself was raised in the boonies, and then his father died, and so he never learned to read or write. But he heard somebody reciting the Diamond Sutra and he woke up. And he kind of took care of his mom. And then he went off in search of a teacher in the north with the fifth ancestor. But he was working in the kitchen, pounding rice and cleaning the rice. He was a servant, basically. And the fifth ancestor knew that he was getting old and he was looking for a successor. So he had a contest and he challenged everybody in the monastery, all the monks, to write something on this blank wall that expressed their understanding. And of course there was a head student. And I'm sorry, Kate, but head students in these stories often are kind of the butt of the joke. So the head student sweated over this because he knew that all the monks looked up to him and that he should be able to express something that warranted becoming the sixth ancestor. Becoming the successor of his teacher. And he knew that he didn't quite get it yet. And he felt terrible, which was to his credit, I think. So finally, in the middle of the night, he did write something on the wall. And he wrote about our practice being to polish the mirror bright so that no dust could alight, or to keep polishing to keep the dust off the mirror. That's a wisdom mirror. And Hui Neng in the kitchen heard about it. Everybody was talking about it and reciting the verse that the head student had written. And so I asked somebody to take him up there and to read it to him. And so this monk did. He read it to him. And Hui Neng said, not quite. And asked the guy if he'd write down his poem. And so the guy said, okay. And, of course, Hui Neng's understanding was there's no mirror. There's no stand. What need is there? There's no dust. What need is there to polish anything? That's the wisdom mirror. You could say it's not a mirror. That's the pivot. And of course, the monks were all astonished, and the fifth ancestor came and he read both of them and he admonished everybody to practice as the head student had advised. Everybody should follow that advice. And then he called secretly on Hui Neng to come to his room in the middle of the night. And Hui Neng did. And the ancestor acknowledged him and taught him and told him that he gave him the robe and the bowl, which was Bodhisattva's bowl and robe and bowl. Gave him those, and he told him, you're going to have to go away, because if the monks find out that I have transmitted to such a lowly person, to a barbarian, as they thought, then you might get hurt. So the fifth ancestor took Hui Neng along and put him on a boat heading out of town and told him, don't start teaching right away. Don't start teaching right away. Let this, I don't remember what word he used, but I mean, let this ferment inside of you. And so Hui Neng didn't teach for another 10 years. But that mirror image is really important. And of course, it's the mirror of no thingness. There's no polishing, there's no dust, there's no mirror. But we still live in this world and we still have lots of dust. So we have to polish the mirror. Just don't forget. Katagiri says that to practice egolessness constantly, we have to practice it always. We don't believe this because we're used to living in the stream of time, which is always facilitating the growth of ego. You could have an enlightenment experience. You could practice for 20 years. Does that guarantee you're free from ego? He says, watch out. Watch out. You don't know how strong the ego sense is. Maybe you do. It's pretty strong. At any cost, we have to deepen our understanding of time and turn the egoistic sense of time into no time, non-time. If we continue to practice very naturally, he says, we reach the bottom of time, the bottom of the ocean. This is the pivot of nothingness, where everything is reflected without any sense of ego. See ourselves reflected in that mirror, we have to throw away our ideas, our wishes, whatever it is. I want to attain enlightenment, or I don't want to be deluded. We have to forget it. I'm not good enough. I'm not as good as Sally. But I'm better than Ralph. Forget it. But how? And this is where we have to use our discriminating mind. We have to remind ourselves to keep breathing. We have to remind ourselves when these thoughts come up in Zazen, comparing ourselves. Or evaluate, this is good Zazen. Daniel said the other day that he had some experience. There was just sitting and just breathing and no sense of I'm doing this. And then all of a sudden he noticed and said, oh, I'm doing it. And that was the end of that for that time. So, you know, it's not like you suddenly get it and then that's it. But we have to work on this. I need to get a clock where I can see it. Our ego is very, it's not just strong. I want to say it's like it's sneaky. because lots of reasons, but because partly, at any rate, I think this is true, right? This is, it's a part of us that wants to live. It is grasping. It is, I want, I am, I'm not, I don't want. It's also the aliveness and the part of us that picks and chooses. Oh, I should sit up straighter. I want to do zazen. I choose this word rather than that word. On and on and on. So it's like people in OA, Overeaters Anonymous, talk about how doubly difficult their practice is because you've got to eat. You know, you don't have to drink liquor, but you have to eat. You have to have this discriminating mind. You have to have this ego. You have to have a certain sense of self. So it's not easy. And we all have these hindrances. One of the reasons to explore them is that they're so common. This sense of, I'm not good enough. And it's come up a lot already here and during this zazen in various ways. What's good enough? Who's judging? You are. So stop it. If only it were that easy, you know, I'll just say, stop it. You say, oh, okay. Maybe I should. That's sometimes helpful to spur us on to more willingness to look at whatever the demons are underneath that. And we don't torture ourselves with all of this judging and comparing and worrying and criticizing and hating and lusting. We don't do that in order to be mean to ourselves, you know? There's some reason, other reason. And we have to look at it. We have to be willing to be it. Be jealousy, be rage, be self-pity, be critical, judging person. Get to know it. What is it? We've been talking for all this year, off and on, about taking a kindly, friendly interest, gentle interest. For now, our mirror reflects our ideas. Katagiri talks about it as a telescope, maybe binoculars. I don't know, but something where, you know, you're just looking for flaws or looking for whatever, you know, for the comparison. Well, is she doing it better than I am? Well, look, I can see he's not sitting up straight. Oh, Mary scratched her nose. and on and on and on. And of course, a basic practice is simply to notice over and over and over. I have a critical judging mind. And I have gotten to the point where I don't beat myself up about being, I'm not critical of myself for being critical. And that's a major step. That's a big thing because it lightens the whole thing up. And I continue to watch it. And I am aware of it when I am doing it. I'm aware of it when I'm expressing it. I'm aware of it when I'm simply thinking it. And I know that it doesn't feel good. And I know a lot of where it comes from. I know what I'm afraid of. I know what I want. And I know how to let it go. I don't always succeed, and I do know how. And I often do succeed. And that pivot comes easier after we've been sitting a while. I don't know about you. I can feel it. My body has relaxed a lot. There's less of the wanting. There's less of the impatience. There's less of the leaning in. Quieter in here. Quieter up here. We want to make that pivot. What he says is to, Katagiri says, to see ourselves reflected in the mirror at the pivot of nothingness. We have to throw away our ideas, our wishes, whatever it is I want to attain. Enlightenment, I don't want to. We have to forget it. When you do zazen, just do zazen until you become completely one with the full function of zazen. When you chop carrots, just become completely one with the full function of chopping carrots. When you're listening to another, just become one with the full function of listening. When you do become completely one with the full function of zazen, there is no egotistic sense that I do zazen. Then zazen is not separate from time. Zazen is one with time. Zazen reflects in the beautiful mirror of not seeing from your own telescope. And just zazen appears. Just listening appears. Just chopping carrots appears. Then we can say zazen is you and you are zazen. We do this zazen, but it's not our zazen. Rather, it's not our zazen. Neither is it not our zazen, whatever we say. There are no words that really hit the mark of the zazen we do. It's just zazen. Zazen is called Buddha's Zazen. Suzuki Roshi said to Blanche when she told him that she understood it, Zazen, he said, I did this in Dokusan yesterday, I think, right? I didn't give the lectures, I'm sure I didn't. Blanche went early on, she went to Suzuki Roshi and said, I think I'm getting this. I think I understand Zazen. And Suzuki Roshi took his stick. I'm not going to do this because I don't want to break it. He said, don't you ever think you do Zazen. Zazen does Zazen. I crept out of the room. Zazen does Zazen. What is that? I don't know. I do know. I don't know. I do know. You don't know. You do know. Your body knows. Your breath knows. And you know, intellectually, you know how to get there. Now, how do you get there? Sit down and get quiet and pay attention and breathe. And sit up straight. And let go of discursive thinking. And don't narrate it. Just do it. And when you notice that you are narrating it, oh, I'm sitting up straight now. Or, oh, I should be checking where my head is. Or, oh, thinking about whatever. Just let it go. You're already present again when you notice it. So just come back to your breath and your body. And then let go of that. Just breathing. Breath to breathing. Just breathing. Don't narrate it. When you notice that you are, you're present again. Check your body. Especially if you notice that you are judging, grasping, averting, lusting. And I'm not necessarily talking about lusting after a person, might be after a shiny red car or a lunch. So notice what it feels like, especially the negative self. Breathe into it. Notice. Use your discriminating mind and notice how it feels when you are mistreating yourself. Feels sort of yucky. Queasy and unsettled. Tight. How does it feel? Maybe you want to cry. Maybe you need to cry. What's underneath that? There's some little kid hurting, some part of you that doesn't feel taken care of. Give it some breath. Remember what you really are. Even if you have a hard time believing it, accept it for the sake of the time of the sesshin, that you really are this luminous mirror, that you really are being. That you really are connected. Beyond connected, you are all of us. And we care about you. And you care about us. And us, I'm using in the complete universe sense. There really is nothing but this luminousness, this luminous mirror. reflecting things as it is. So remind yourself. Well, yeah. I'm not who I think I am. I really am. Really is. This really is it. So you can use this discriminating mind to encourage yourself and to soothe yourself. I love the homage to the Prajnaparamita. It says she's an organ of vision, and she has a clear knowledge of the being of all dharmas, for she does not stray away from it. Of course, we don't have own being. We think we have own being. And we have to live using that sense of own being. But don't forget that who you really are is something sweeter and more light and more generous than who you think you are. And if you can't believe it right now, take my word for it. Take Katagiri's word for it. Take Dogen's word for it. Take Mel's word for it. Take Suzuki Roshi's word for it. And that's his phrase, things as it is. And Mel loves it and talks about it. So I didn't leave a whole lot of time, but there's some time for questions or comments if anybody has. Okay.
I have had that experience of sitting. I had many years of being uncomfortable in my seat, and one time, like Daniel, I finally got it. I mean, I had the moment and did the exact same thing, and I thought, this is it, and then it was gone. but since. My experience sometimes at the last period during the day when it's all dark and quiet, and it's not always this particular times. There have been other times, but it seems it's quieter, and I'm not thinking about doing Zazen. And it comes and goes, but I've had that experience, and it seems my biggest challenge in staying with my body is when there's pain in my body. So I was wondering if you could maybe talk about that a bit, a minute.
It's something, pain is natural when you sit still for so long. And you're the only one who can figure out how to respond to it. If you tighten up and panic about it, you make it worse. If you can relax and notice it gently, it may go away. It may lighten up. It may change to another part of your body. You have to decide if it's the kind of pain where you're hurting yourself, nerve pain kind of pain, you should change your position. Go into a resting position for a while, whatever. Don't sit there and hurt yourself. sometimes. And you cultivate an understanding of this with practice. You know, sometimes pain is resistance pain. It's because you don't want to be with something difficult. So you distract yourself. Your body decides to cooperate and your knee starts hurting, your back, your shoulders. And that kind of pain, once you understand the difference in your body, that kind of pain you should sit still and sit with. Gently, kindly. And there are things to do. You can take, if your back is bothering you, take a really big breath and hold it for a while and sort of stretch it out that way. And take a few of those. You can imagine pulling your spine out and dipping it in a vat of olive oil if you're a cook. And then put it back in after you've lubricated it. You can do that whether you're a cook or not. It's just a cook's image. You can think of all those little blood cells bringing bright red ones, bringing oxygen, and white ones dealing with inflammation and irritation. Send little armies there. Breathe into it. Send blood to it with your mind. That's the short version.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Do you want to?
No. Okay.
Daniel?
Thank you, Mary. I'm going to put you on gallery view real quick. Yeah, I had a wonderful day yesterday, which isn't to say that I had a painless sit or anything like that. It was just a good day. And I think, you know, looking back on it now, the best part of it was when my power went out during morning service. And I really got a kick out of that because it was just, you know, like that. And the magic was gone and my ego was into play immediately. And it cracks me up because, you know, for those of you who don't know, I have a pretty large family. And even right now, my three sons and a girlfriend are over. And so there's activity in my household when I sit. And I've had a committed sitting practice now for a good 6+ years. And when I first started to sit, you know, Suzuki Roshi's statement that when we sit, the universe sits with us, to me meant when I sit, that means you better all shut up so I can sit, get my mind in place. And, you know, now I've been doing it for 6 years and I have the opposite. And I sit in my house every day and I just see activity go around me. And I take a certain joy with that because I just let it happen. And it just is.
You have a question?
No question. But just my comment on the lecture today. And that's why yesterday was so funny to me, because all of a sudden my ego is into play. And I look back at it now and it's like, well, my reaction was authentic, I think, because it meant something to me. It was important what I was doing yesterday. So
I'll pick one more. We're already over.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Illusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Illusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Illusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them.